Greetings, world. Hip Hop Sports Support Podcast. Jay Hicks behind the mic again. I'm back, y'all. How y'all doing? Hope you enjoyed yourself this weekend. I know I did. Today is Sunday, January 11th, 2015. Our first new podcast of the new year. Another new year. A lot of great things in store for the podcast and for HipHopSportsSupport.com. So thank you to all you who have been supporting us from the very beginning. We will continue to try and grow this site and this podcast as best as I can. And, you know, I have a lot of help from a lot of great people to this point, and I plan on taking that even a step further. So thank you very much for those of you who have supported us from the start. Normally, we have a guest on the Your Ad Here hotline. Today, preseason podcast of the year, I'm flying solo. Just me this evening. Just got done watching all the games. And we actually haven't spoken since before January 1st, obviously, which was when we had our college football playoff. The first two playoff games take effect for NCAA football, the national championship on the line and all that stuff. We're going to touch on the championship game a little bit later on. First thing I wanted to do was, after I do some shameless plugging, I'm going to jump into this weekend's NFL action. But in case you haven't been, please check out the website again, HipHopSportsSupport.com. We have some new articles up recently. My take on the NFL divisional round and how I believe the weekend would play out. Didn't quite play out quite like I thought, but did have some stuff right, did have some stuff wrong. We'll touch on all that. So please check out that article. Another article that I would like for you all to check out, it's really cool, I thought, was just, I did some research into what I believed was the new barrier or the new standard by which we need to call MCs stars in this industry. Because I feel like a lot of times people just get a pass and people just think like, just because you put out one album or one record or you get a little mixtape buzz or something, that you need to be taken like legitimately seriously in this industry. I don't really see it that way. I feel like there's a certain threshold that you need to reach in order for you to attain rap superstar status. And that threshold is you need to release 3 albums on a major label. And I feel like if you're not doing that, if you're not releasing 3 albums on a major these days, you're not top tier status. You can't even, that gets you the invitation to the party. You're not even invited to the party. You're outside parking cars or something like that if you're an MC and you haven't released 3 albums on a major. And reason being is just that these days a lot of people don't feel like releasing albums on a major matters as much, and people think that it's all about the mixtape stuff and you can just go the independent route and you can make a lot of money and have a very lucrative, successful career doing that. And I don't disagree with any of that, but those people aren't classified in the same category as those who release albums on major labels. And there's a certain power that comes along with releasing albums on a major, that if you are able to do that and you make people care and you make them listen, it's saying something, it's worth something. Even if you're not selling tons and tons of records, the fact that you can even get to that point says a lot about you as an artist and the reach that you have. So I chronicled a lot of artists who have come out since between like 2011 and 2013, artists that have dropped their first major label debut in that time frame, and where they are now as far as releasing that third album, getting to that third album plateau. And you'd be surprised at some of the names on there of guys that haven't done it yet. People like J. Cole and Nicki Minaj just now getting to that point. So you can imagine some of these other names. It's a little shocking at first. So please check that out. You know, I won't go into too much more detail because then why would you read the article? It's on HipHopSportsSupport.com. Again, hit us on Facebook, Facebook.com/HHSReport, and Twitter as well. I need as many Twitter followers as possible, y'all. I need followers. I'm like Pac-Man when it comes to Twitter followers. I need y'all to help me out. And so I can tweet stuff and y'all can retweet it and we can build this thing and it can grow. And yeah, I'm being really selfish right now, but guess what? Chances are I'll follow you back. There's like 9 times out of 10 I'll follow you back if you follow me first. So please follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/HHSReport. Of course, the podcast is on iTunes as well, the preseason podcast of the year. Now, getting to the divisional round of the playoffs. We'll start with the NFC. We'll start with the game that I think is probably going to be the most talked about from this weekend, the Packers and the Cowboys. Now, on our article about the divisional round matchups, I did have the Dallas Cowboys going into Lambeau Field and upsetting the Packers, basically because I was confident that they would be able to run the ball on Green Bay. I thought that they'd be able to run the ball successfully, they would push Green Bay around, they would own the line of scrimmage, and no matter what you think about football and no matter what you think about what direction this league is headed, 90% of football games are still won in the trenches, and the team that's able to block better, the team that's able to tackle better, the team that's able to control the line of scrimmage, impose their will, all those fun cliches that we all know and love, that stuff's true. If you're able to do that, then you are more than likely going to win the game. And that's something that Dallas was great at because they had, what, two or maybe three Pro Bowlers on that offensive line. DeMarco Murray, who ran for over 1,800 yards, I think 1,875 yards this year, led the NFL in rushing by a wide margin. This is what the Cowboys do. And so even in the cold weather, even though they're basically a warm weather indoor team going up to a cold weather situation in Green Bay, Wisconsin, I was confident that they would be able to push Green Bay around because Green Bay has struggled stopping a run throughout the season. And guess what? DeMarco Murray ran the ball 25 times for 123 yards and a touchdown. And he averaged 5 yards a carry. And Joseph Randle also ripped off two carries for 15 yards. And Dallas as a team averaged over 5 yards a carry. They pretty much did their job on the ground. That wasn't really a factor as far as that's concerned. I will say and give a little credit to Green Bay. Green Bay actually ran the ball. They had more rushing attempts than Dallas did, and they ran for 119 yards to their credit. Eddie Lacy got over 100 as well in the game. So I don't want to make it sound like that Dallas totally dismantled Green Bay up front, because they didn't. It was fairly even on both sides of the ball. But I thought Dallas would be able to control the line of scrimmage and therefore control the game. And they did to a large degree. And let me just get this off real quick as well while we're on the subject of the Dallas Cowboys. Because I mentioned in an article, not this week, but before the wild card games, that I thought that Tony Romo does not deserve to be any higher than fifth on anybody's MVP ballot. And he's got a lot of MVP buzz the last few weeks. The reason I feel that way is because despite the fact that Romo's had the best season of his career and that he's been incredibly efficient as well, Tony Romo's success has been predicated upon the success of DeMarco Murray and the Cowboys' running attack. That's been the sole reason why Romo has been as good as he's been, because they've protected him to a large degree from himself. Now, I'm not even going to say that Romo hasn't been underrated for some years, because he probably has been. And even, you know, I'm guilty of making fun of him on Twitter when he throws silly interceptions and stuff like that. But Romo has been a very good quarterback for a long time, but he has been incredibly efficient because he's thrown the ball less. And he's thrown the ball less because Dallas has run more. And if you watch the Cowboys, they run the ball on first and second down all the time. They run it on third and short or third and goal from the one or the two. They run it all the time. They are always looking to run first, and it's the run that set up the pass. It's not a situation like Green Bay where they have an elite passing attack that sets up the run. So assuming Eddie Lacy had an even better season than he had, nobody would give Eddie Lacy MVP votes because he has Rodgers on his team. So to me, you can't give Tony Romo MVP when there's a dude in his backfield that ran for almost 2,000 yards. He was like 150 yards away from 2,000. 2 years ago, we gave Adrian Peterson the MVP award because he ran for over 2,000 yards, and his team wasn't even good as DeMarco Murray's team is. So Murray needs to be ahead of Romo on any ballot. So therefore, there's no way that Romo can win MVP, in my opinion, unless you're ready to give it to DeMarco Murray first, in which case Romo wouldn't win MVP. So just had to get that off real quick. Getting back to the game, though, today, the Packers were in trouble. I'm not going to front. They were in trouble. I didn't think they were going to win, but they were hanging tough, specifically their quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, who played like a warrior. He played like a warrior. I think people were kind of like maybe not taking his calf injury too seriously until the news broke that he had a tear in his calf in addition to the significant strain of his calf muscle. He was in legitimate pain. It was legitimate in week 17 against the Lions. He needed every bit of those 2 weeks to get prepared for this game, and he still was clearly not 100%. I will say, though, that it appeared that he loosened up as the game went on. Rodgers was more accurate, was more fluid in the pocket, and he seemed to get his legs under him, no pun intended, really, but I guess maybe sort of a little bit, as the game went on. And as the game progressed, he got sharper and sharper, and in the fourth quarter, he looked a lot like Aaron Rodgers. He finished the game 24-35 for 316 yards, three scores, no picks, a passer rating of 125. He was fantastic. Tony Romo, going back to the MVP discussion, this game was a microcosm for the Dallas Cowboys season. And I'm not saying that Romo didn't have a great season, because he did. But Romo was 15 for 19. He only threw four incompletions. I didn't even realize that, y'all. He threw four incompletions, what really should be three incompletions, and we'll get to that in a second. But he threw 15 of 19 completions for 191 yards, two scores, no picks. So Romo didn't turn the ball over. He completed two touchdowns and no interceptions. So the good touchdown to interception ratio, especially on the road for Romo, has been big for him this year. Romo finished with like 34, 35 touchdowns, which is roughly two per game. And that's exactly what he had today. And he was incredibly efficient because he had... Oh, he only threw 19 passes, and they ran the ball 25 times with DeMarco Murray. Romo's passer rating was higher than Rodgers. It was 143.6, and if you're into QBR with the old ESPN thing, his QBR was 77.8, which is very good as well. So Romo played fine. He played his game was a very good reflection of the kind of season that he's had. But then the game came down to one play. Fourth and two, after Romo takes a horrendous sack earlier in that series. Fourth and two, they only need 2 yards, and typically I'm not a fan of teams going deep in a situation where you don't need to. Like, you only need 2 yards, so you don't need to throw the ball 40 yards down the field. You're just creating a more difficult play than what's necessary. But he had man coverage with Dez Bryant on the outside. Dez goes up over Sam Shields. He makes the catch. He comes down. He lands on the ground with possession. To me, it looks like he extends, as he comes down, it looks like he has the ball in his left hand and extends with his elbow across the goal line, which he came up short of the goal line. He then rolled over, his momentum carried him to roll over, the ball squirts out of his arm, pops up in the air, and then he catches it. The officials ruled it on the field as a reception. Twitter exploded, everybody's going nuts. Joe Buck lost his mind. Troy Aikman probably, you know, pissed a little bit on himself. You know, he probably had a couple drops come out, right? And then they overturned the call. They said, no, he didn't catch it. We just playing, y'all. He didn't catch that pass. You know, it's hard to feel too bad for Cowboy fans because they got over on the Detroit Lions last week. And I talked about that in the divisional round article. Why the Detroit Lions got hosed, but it was not the reason why they lost the game, but the Lions did get played. Similar situation here. Dallas got played, and it wasn't the fact that they overturned it. I think that you could make an argument that the officials executed the letter of the law correctly. But I think you could actually debate the letter of the law in that rule, because as I understood it, based on what Mike Pereira and all these other people were saying on television, was that Dez caught the ball and therefore he didn't make a football move. He went straight to the turf. And then the ball squirted out. Therefore, it was an incompletion. Whereas if he had come down with it and made a quote unquote football move, then it would have been he turns into a ball carrier at that point, and then he retains possession because the ground can't cause the fumble kind of thing. Well, to me, again, it looked as though Dez reached out with his left hand. It looked like he consciously knew what he was doing as he reached out with his left arm. His elbow was bent, but he had the ball in his left arm, and he reached out for the goal line. That looks like a football move. If you reach for the end zone with the ball, that looks like a football move. He just didn't stick the ball out with one hand because he was trying to secure possession, which he did. And then he reached out, and then in that process, he lost the ball, and then it squirted up in the air, but he caught it. And the biggest thing for me about that play is, you know, I cannot escape the fact that Dez Bryant physically caught the football. He caught it. He caught the ball. Like, what else? What needs to happen? You know, I get the purpose of the rule, because the rule basically says, like, okay, so say, for example, you throw a 5 yard out to a guy and the guy catches it at the sideline and he gets 2 feet in, but then he just juggles it out of bounds, and say he juggles all the way over to the bench. Even if, like, not even like seriously trying to catch it, but like literally just playing with the football, just juggling it, juggle all the way to the bench, sits down on the bench and then grabs it. Like, that's an extreme, but you can't call that a reception. So you have to draw those lines in the sand somewhere, because we need to understand what a reception is and isn't. And having possession going out of bounds, going to the ground, you know, there's these things are in place for a reason. But we need to revise this rule because, and everybody said, you know, well, this is, goes back to the Calvin Johnson rule a few years ago against the Bears when Calvin caught that touchdown and they took it away from him for no reason. And what was funny about that was that that was like 2010. So if we knew the rule was jacked up in 2010, how come it didn't get addressed yet? And why is it 2015? It was like 2011, maybe. Maybe I'm exaggerating. 2011, 12, 10, something in there. But that was at least 2 or 3 years ago, at least. And we still haven't corrected this rule? And now we have a playoff game possibly being decided by that? That's messed up. Cowboys got screwed on that play. Because that would have been first and goal from the 2-yard line with maybe, I don't know, 6-7 minutes left, maybe less. Maybe a little bit less than that. Maybe 4 or 5 minutes left. I don't really remember, but... And assuming Dallas scores, which we can't assume for sure, we don't know what happens. So that's why we can't say Dallas would have won the game had he caught that. We don't know. But assuming Dallas scores, now you have Rodgers still on one leg, getting a little bit more comfortable, but still on one leg, having to lead the Packers down for a game-winning touchdown. And it changes things significantly. So yeah, they got played, man. But the Packers played well enough to win. They weren't overly impressive. But they beat a very good Dallas team, and so I'm not going to take this win away from them. And like I said, Aaron Rodgers played like a champion today. And then moving back to last night's NFC game, the Seahawks and the Cardinals. The Seahawks and the Panthers. It should have been the Seahawks and the Cardinals. If the Cardinals management knew what they were doing, they could find anybody on the street that could throw a football better than Ryan Lindley. Yeah, it probably would have been the Seahawks and the Cardinals. But as it was, Seahawks and Panthers hooked up in Seattle. And, what we had here is a case of one team being significantly better than the other. And that's, I mean, there's not a whole lot of way I can, like, dress this one up, y'all, on the microphone. Like, I can start screaming and yelling and hollering about this game, but it really isn't a whole lot to say. The Panthers were lucky to get to this point, frankly. The Panthers had a pretty good season considering how much of a train wreck it was for about the first 10 weeks. They went 7 weeks consecutively without winning a game. And they still made it to the divisional round of the playoffs, so... That's pretty impressive, I guess. But Cam Newton played a decent game, I thought. Even with the one pick that he had, I thought he played a decent game until he threw the pick six to Cam Chancellor. 90-yard pick six, you can't have that. That's just, you're not going to win a playoff game if you do. That's a 14-point swing right there. And the game was still, they still had a shot at that point. I mean, it wasn't much of a shot, but I mean, it was 24-10. When Cam Chancellor picked off Cam Newton, a little Cam on Cam crime. And that made it 31-10 instead of making it 24-17. And maybe the Panthers trying to get the ball back with about 4 minutes to go. You know, maybe they get a stop. Maybe they get a three and out. Maybe they go onside kick. They don't have to, though, in that situation. Defense had been playing fairly well. They had only given up 24 points. I mean, I think they have a shot. I mean, I'm not saying they win because I had Seattle winning and I had Seattle covering the minus 11 or minus 11 and a half or whatever it was, which they did. But still, I mean, they had a shot. I thought Jonathan Stewart needed to be huge in order for Carolina to have a shot, though, going into the game. And he finished with 70 yards on 13 carries. He actually had 5.5 yards a carry, but I think Carolina just got down early and it was hard for them to sustain that running game like they would have wanted. Russell Wilson was just magnificent yet again. I've described him years ago to a friend of the podcast, Anthony Houston. I described him as a little mobile brown Tom Brady. And that's how I feel about Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson is just poised all the time. He hardly ever makes bad decisions. How many quarterbacks can you say hardly ever make bad decisions? Like hardly ever make bad decisions. Brady, Rodgers, Wilson, and that's about it, y'all. Think about it. Everybody else, they make horrendous decisions like all the time. Like, you just see it every single Sunday. Even, like, people that are classified as good quarterbacks, like Andrew Luck and Matt Ryan and stuff. Like, these guys make bonehead plays all the time. Russell Wilson, Rodgers, and Brady don't do that. And guess what? They're all playing next weekend. So, call that what it is. I don't really know. But I'm just saying, that's just kind of what I noticed. Wilson was spectacular on third down, and third down was a key. And if you didn't think third down, I mean, nobody thinks third down isn't a key, but if you didn't realize how crucial third down was, just go back and watch the Ohio State Alabama game where Alabama got destroyed on third downs by Ohio State. Go back and look at the Seattle Carolina game where Seattle destroyed Carolina on third down. Go back and look at last night's New England Baltimore game where the Ravens were horrific on third down, especially in the second half. Look at today's Indianapolis-Denver game, where Denver was horrendous on third down. Third down matters. It matters from a scheme level. It matters from a defensive level. Even if your team is on offense and your team can't convert a third down, that means your offense can't stay on the field. That means your defense, who's already gassed, has to go back out onto the field. If it's the flip side and your team's on defense, and if you don't get a third down stop, it's demoralizing to the team and to the coaching staff and to the fans. It just deflates the whole stadium. It matters a lot. And so we saw that again. Seattle and Carolina, Russell Wilson just owned the Panthers on third down. I don't have any direct stats in front of me, y'all, but just take my word for it. You all watched the game, right? Of course you did. So, yeah, man, they got smacked around on third down. And Carolina, like I said, they were lucky to be there. I think Carolina is actually not in a terrible place going forward because they have a fairly young team. Their biggest cornerstone pieces are Cam Newton and Luke Kuechly, one on offense, one on defense, both with exceptional amounts of promise. Luke Kuechly already was Rookie of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year last year, I think. There's no reason to think that they can't continue this going forward for many years. And they've gone to the divisional round 2 years in a row, so that's a good thing. But Seattle, again, let me take you back to the beginning of the season real quick. You know, I said that the Saints were going to come out of the NFC. I believe that at the time, as ridiculous as it sounds now, but I said that Seattle was still the best team in football. And I said that the only reason really why I thought New Orleans would get there ahead of Seattle is because I thought an NFC Championship game would be in New Orleans, and that was back when we all thought that New Orleans couldn't lose in New Orleans. But now that we know New Orleans can lose in New Orleans, they're out of the picture, and so Seattle's the king of the hill again. And so, you know, I kind of felt like Seattle was going to then, at the start of the playoffs, come out, not just because they had home field, but that was to a large point of it, but I felt like they were just the best team left in the NFC. And so Seattle got beat by Dallas earlier in the year, but they destroyed the Packers in week one. So I don't know if you can put much stock into week one necessarily. I think the Colts and Broncos proved that you probably can't put so much stock into week one because that was back in September. Now we're in January. Things change, but Seattle and Green Bay is going to be your NFC Championship game. I give an edge to Seattle, and I think that I'm gonna write another article. I'm assuming I'm going to have time to do it. I'm actually doing some fun stuff this weekend. I'm going to be traveling to LA, y'all. I'm going to be at the Cavaliers-Clippers game in Staples Center next Friday night. But assuming I don't have the time to do it, which I think I will, but assuming I don't, let me just put this out there now. I do believe that Seattle gets the edge over the Packers in that game. And let's move to the AFC real quick. The Patriots and the Ravens last night. Man, oh man. You know, I was on the Patriots from the start of the season. Of course, you all recall I picked them to win the Super Bowl. As you all, if you follow this website at all, if you follow my podcast at all, you know that I'm a huge Tom Brady supporter to the point that it's almost embarrassing. But you know what? I'm gonna hold my head high because Tom Brady more often than not proves me right. And even if his team doesn't win, which they do most of the time, it often isn't because he had a horrendous game or he threw a monumental, colossal interception in a key spot. He doesn't do those types of things. Tom Brady wins. That's just what he does. And last night, though, I was scared going into the game. I'm not going to front, y'all. I was scared for the sake of the Patriots because, yeah, I was on Baltimore weeks ago. You guys remember the article from November when I wrote about who could beat the New England Patriots? And I chronicled a lot of the Patriots' playoff losses from recent years. And I said the types of teams that give the Patriots fits, they get after Brady, they get after the quarterback, they get the lead early. They play with tremendous confidence and fire, and they can control clock and force a turnover here or there. Those are the kinds of characteristics it takes to knock off New England in the playoffs, especially in Foxborough. Nobody knows this better than the Ravens, and the Ravens went out and executed that to a large degree the other night. They actually won time of possession. They got New England down early, 14-0, right out the gate. And then they had him down 28-14. They forced Brady to throw a crucial interception at the end of the first half, which directly led to a Ravens touchdown. And all the pieces were in place for another upset of the Patriots in Foxborough at the hands of the Ravens. Everything was there. It was all on the table. But to their credit, Tom Brady and the Patriots, and I should throw Bill Belichick's name in there too, because he and Josh McDaniels dialed up that little play where they flicked it to Edelman, and Edelman, Mac Daddy action, you know, Mac quarterback, Kent State quarterback. Edelman throws it down the field to Amendola. Perfect throw, by the way. And that stuff played into it. So it wasn't a complete one-sided Brady thing. But then again, if you look a little more closely, the Patriots didn't run the ball at all in the second half. They only ran the ball 13 times the entire game. 13 carries for 14 yards. I believe the stat was it was the fewest rushing yards gained in a playoff victory in NFL history by a team. They got nothing on the ground. And a lot of that was because they didn't try to get anything. But Tom Brady ran for a touchdown in that game. He ran for a first down in the second half that was key. I believe it was on a third down. He got a sneak for a first down. So those plays count for something. And beyond that, it was all on Brady. He threw the ball 50 times, but he completed 33 passes for 367 yards, 3 touchdowns, and the 1 interception I spoke on. His rating was 99. His QBR was 80.1. It was a fantastic performance, especially given the circumstances, being down 14 points twice, which is something that only 3 teams in regular season NFL history has ever done. Come back from multiple 14-point deficits to win a game. It's never been done in the playoffs until Brady did it. But here's a fun fact for you. Tom Brady did it in college, in the Orange Bowl, his last game in college with Michigan. He did the same thing with Alabama. Michigan got down 14-0. They tied it at 14. They got down 28-14. Michigan tied it back at 28, rather. And they won the game in overtime. They called Tom Brady the comeback kid 15 years ago, and he's still proving it to this day. He was sensational. Joe Flacco, on the other hand, was interesting. He was not bad by any means, Flacco. You throw 4 touchdown passes, it's kind of hard to find a lot of fault with your performance. But there's something to be said for timeliness. In this particular case, Flacco threw 2 second-half interceptions. And that hurt his team tremendously, especially the last one when the Ravens were driving to try to win the game. And he threw one deep to Torrey Smith. There was a coverage was shaded that way, which is exactly how you play the Ravens. You let Revis do his thing with Steve Smith man-to-man, and then you put Browner over there on Torrey Smith, and then you give him safety help deep. That's textbook how you do it, right? And that's exactly what they did. The safety beat Torrey Smith to the football, and you had your interception, game over. So a great, great win for the Patriots. A great, great effort by the Ravens. As much as I hate the Ravens because I'm a Browns fan, I got to give the Ravens credit for showing up, for playing hard, for playing well enough to win the game, actually. And they just came up a little bit short. But you can't get mad at Baltimore, except for John Harbaugh, from saying that they were running some illegal substitutions or whatever. That was hilarious. Because then Tom Brady comes back and says, well, those guys need to study the damn rule book better, because they don't know what they're talking about, because everything we did was legal. And today the NFL came out and said it was legal. So moving on from that game, which was pretty much an instant classic, this afternoon, the Denver Broncos hosted the Indianapolis Colts. I've had a lot to say about the Denver Broncos on our website, hiphopsportsreport.com, and on the preseason podcast of the year. Basically, since the Broncos acquired Peyton Manning, I've pretty much picked against them, I think, in every postseason game that they played in. At least I know I did last year. I picked against them 3 times last year, and I was wrong the first 2. But boy, was I right the 3rd time. And then this year, I flipped the script. I said, you know what? I don't think the Colts are ready to take that next step. And Denver's at home. They play well at home. Peyton might not be 100% healthy, but he's healthy enough. Julius Thomas is back, and they'll get the job done. Didn't happen. Peyton Manning was terrible today, y'all. Terrible. I'm trying to pull up the box score as we speak, because I'm having some difficulties doing that. But he did not play well. And if you look at Manning in the... Well, here we go. Peyton Manning was 26 of 46 for 211 yards, a touchdown, no interceptions, and he lost a fumble. Those numbers are actually a little bit better than what they should have been. He actually threw a game-closing interception to Vontae Davis with about 3 minutes left. It went right through Vontae's hands, hit him right in the chest, and he dropped the ball. And then Peyton got some little garbage time yards to get him up over the 200-yard mark. But this is the guy that everybody claims is the greatest to ever do it. They claim that he's the greatest to ever do it. How can you be the greatest to ever do something if you never succeed at that thing at the highest level? Peyton Manning has never succeeded at the highest level in the NFL. Even the one year that he won the Super Bowl. So if you want to give him that one, you're entitled to do that. I, on the other hand, tend to look at that playoff run and say, Bob Sanders came back healthy in 06. They got a little bit of help from the Patriots dropping passes in the AFC Championship game. Rashad Caldwell dropped passes. It's on the internet. It's on YouTube. Look it up. Rashad Caldwell dropped one touchdown. Probably could have been two touchdowns in that game. Colts came back, won that AFC Championship game, and then they beat Rex Grossman. They beat Rex Grossman in the Super Bowl. I, for one, was not all that impressed by Peyton in that run because he threw three touchdowns and seven interceptions in those four games. That was the year they won the Super Bowl. He threw three touchdowns and seven interceptions in four games. Every other year, he's come up short. And this is despite years where his team was like 15-1, 14-2, 12-4, 12-4, 11-5, 12-4, 13-3. Every single year. He gets to the playoffs every single year. He puts up monster numbers every single year. He's won the regular season MVP award five times. One of those times I thought he really didn't deserve it. Another time he shared it with Steve McNair. Nobody remembers that, but it was a co-MVP. So he got like 4.5 MVPs. If I really want to be spiteful and be mean, he had 4.5 MVPs. But you know, five MVP awards. And he never plays like he does in the regular season in the playoffs. And that's the point. Even though a lot of those games were indoors in Indianapolis, even though he's favored in all these games, even though he has all these tremendous weapons around him, even though everything is laid out for him to succeed, even when last year when, you know, he faces New England, his arch rival, and everybody on the Patriots is in a cast, and they limp to the field, and they limp onto the field at Mile High, and they get beat up pretty handily in that game. They go to the Super Bowl, right? It's like the first outdoor Super Bowl ever. Or I should say outdoor cold weather Super Bowl ever. And the weather is great. The weather was great. And even in that game, Peyton got annihilated. I just don't get these people who think that he is the greatest of the greats. I've said it 1,000 times. Peyton Manning, if you want to put him in the top 10 quarterback conversation of all time, fine. Just put him down closer to 10. That's all I'm saying. Put him closer to 10. Because you cannot be number one if you get to the playoffs every year and let your team down. And if he is not doing the four touchdown, five touchdown thing like he does during the regular season, and he's calling all the plays, and it just does not come together, that's on him. Because we give him all the credit when it works and when it succeeds. We're calling him the greatest of all time last year after that season he had. And he goes into the Super Bowl. And the same thing that they said against the Saints was the same thing that they said against the Seahawks, which was, if Peyton Manning wins this game, he's going to go down as the greatest of all time. And then he blows it. Like, I just don't get it. Like, I just don't understand how you can continue to make excuses for this man. I've actually solicited people on my personal Facebook page to bring your excuses to me, because I'm waiting on somebody to tell me what the reasoning was that he lost this game today. He was garbage. He was overthrowing receivers on every snap. And like in the second quarter, there was a series where Peyton went long, 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 and long again. All of them were overthrown. None of them were on target. The fans started booing. I tweeted from the Hip Hop Sports Report Twitter account. I'm like, yo, are they booing Peyton Manning for these throws, or are they booing the play calling by the offensive coordinator in the Broncos team? Well, everybody gives Peyton Manning credit for being the de facto offensive coordinator. So I'm like, well, they're pretty much booing Peyton either way. Either he's calling terrible plays and his decisions to go long every time are garbage, or the throws themselves are garbage, which we definitely know to be true. I didn't know which one they were booing, but here's what I do know. Emmanuel Sanders was beating his man down the field. Demaryius Thomas was beating his man down the field. And Peyton missed him. He just missed him, man. And we've seen Peyton have better days. Even in the playoffs, we've seen him have good games before. So it's not every game he's bad in the playoffs. But this was against the same Indianapolis Colts team that made Ben Roethlisberger look like Jesus on the football field. Remember Ben Roethlisberger threw 6 touchdowns against this Colts defense? It's the same defense. It's not like, I mean, they played a great game and he did. I'm gonna get to that in a second, but Roethlisberger lit these guys up. Peyton Manning is capable of lighting these guys up, and it just didn't happen. It's just, man, like, I don't know what it is with that dude, man. It's just something about him. Every single time he comes up short. And I'm just tired of making excuses for him. That's pretty much what it boils down to. I got a good friend, Jason. Shout out to my homie Jason, who lives in Dallas. He's from Denver originally. He's a huge Broncos fan. He was all excited when they first signed Peyton Manning, and I told him, I'm like, look, man, you know you're not winning a Super Bowl, right? It's not gonna happen. Just let it go now. Like, get excited if you want to. You're not winning a Super Bowl with this guy. And here we are, 3 years into the Peyton Manning experiment. He had the horrendous loss in the playoffs against Baltimore, where he throws the back shoulder interception in overtime. You have a terrible playoff loss in the Super Bowl last year. And then you have another loss where you were favored by, at kickoff, the Broncos were favored by 9 points at home against a young, wet-behind-the-ears Colts team. And you got blown off the field again. And he looked pretty bad doing it. So all the moves John Elway made, all the defensive moves and stuff, I don't want to totally dismiss the Indianapolis Colts. So let's give them a hand clap, because the Colts were the only team this week to go out on the road and pull off an upset, and they deserve some credit for that. Chuck Pagano played he called a great game. Pep Hamilton called a great game. Andrew Luck was terrific, save for 2 boneheaded decisions to throw the ball down the field into, like, triple coverage or whatever. You better not do that next week, but, you know, kudos to Andrew Luck for playing a great game. I wrote on the website that the next step in Andrew Luck development was he was going to have to win a big-time road playoff game against Manning or Brady. And that was the next phase for him. And he did it. He did it today. Carpe diem. Kudos to Andrew Luck. And the Colts defense, which looked surprisingly efficient against Denver. They were forcing Denver off the field on third downs. They were physical with their receivers, and they didn't let CJ Anderson run wild. I mean, it was really a good game. The Colts offensive line also played a very good game. So Indy looks a little bit better than what we thought. I mean, if you look at the Colts progression, when Luck was a rookie, they made it to the wild card round and lost. And this is a year after they had won like 1 game. They were like 1-15 in order to get Andrew Luck. The following year they were in the playoffs and they lost, I believe, to Baltimore in the wild card round. Last year, they host a playoff game in a wild card round, and they beat Kansas City before they got their brains beaten in by the Patriots. And then this year, they win a game at home against Cincinnati, and then they go out in Denver, and they pull the big upset against Peyton Manning. So, terrific job by Indianapolis, despite the Trent Richardson trade, despite Jim Irsay's idiocy. They were still able to overcome these things and make it to the AFC Championship game and progress beautifully. I mean, beautifully. That's what you want. That's what you want from your team. Even if you don't win the Super Bowl, every team wants to win the Super Bowl at the start, but you also have to set realistic expectations for yourself. Realistic expectation for the Cleveland Browns this year was to maybe go 8-8. Or you know, they were 7-9 this year. So 7-9 is an improvement, but they ended the year in a really bad way. I'm not going to talk about them right now. We'll save that for another podcast. But the point is, you set realistic expectations for yourself, and the Colts have proven that they've gotten better and better each year. So, bravo to the Colts. I was wrong twice this weekend. I was 2-2 this weekend. I was 3-1 last weekend on predictions. It's well within a realm of possibility that I'll get next week's game wrong too, but I've had the Patriots from the very beginning, and I thought that Baltimore was the toughest matchup by far for them, and I was the only one saying it before the playoffs, because everybody else was saying Pittsburgh and Denver, and I'm like, no, it's Baltimore. Baltimore snuck in the playoffs, and they gave the Patriots all they could handle yesterday. But now I think it actually gets easier. I think Baltimore was a tougher game for them, and it toughened them up for the next 2 games. They're not going to be rusty, because they're not going to have a 2-week layoff. They're going to roll right into Foxborough next weekend, and I don't know how ugly it's going to get, but I see them winning. I see the Patriots pulling it out, y'all. Let's talk some little college football, right? Let's have a little, matter of fact, let's throw a little hip-hop in here. How about we do a little hip-hop interlude? That's what we like to do on the podcast. How about a little Nip Hustle?
Yeah.
Feel right.
Sound like some AZ shit.
Gangsta. Black Sam, home.
What? Count up that low. Count up that low. Nigga, count up that low. That's just what I do.
Gangsta.
Count up that low. Trish nigga.
Off.
What? Count up that low. Count up that low. Nah. Count up that low. Count up that low. Nah. Black on black bands, young niggas sit low. Blah, go Cuban links, just rapping my roots. Blah, blood, sweat, and tears, just squeezing my fruits. Blah, top of my game, and what's up with you? Blah, pop at you lames, cause I'm sucking pro. Blah, don't play no games, boy, I'm busting pro. Can't fuck with me, I don't fuck with you. You a fucking fraud, I'm the fucking truth. I went solo on that ass, I think I'm fucking Snoop. Solo in this game, I'm like, fuck the group. Solo in my SL Benz, like, fuck the roof. That's fucking true. That's fucking hoe. Near motherfucker, looking like a hustler do. I built this label up just like Russell do. Give me 10 years, they gon' be like Russell Ho. Never trust them fools. Get a fucking clue. I skip the memes, tell them fangs, watch my fucking moves. A Birdman in blue chucks, watch my fucking shoes. I'm Suge Knight, I'm Jay Prince, I'm like, fuck the rules. I'm Austin Rosen, I'm Jonah Berger. This ain't black on black crime, but it's fucking murder. This beat ain't even mixed, but it's fucking perfect. They paid $100 for my tape, and it was fucking worth it. Shout out to Wendy Williams, cause she helped it surface. Shout out my nigga Jigga, cause he made that purchase. Shout out my nigga Sway, my nigga B-Dot. Who kids sold out the first day we had to restock? Nah, count up that low, count up that low. Nah, black on black Benz, young nigga salute. Nah, go Cuban links, just rapping my roots. Nah, blood, sweat, and tears, just squeezing my fruits. Nah, my nigga Hoggy got shot in his head. Nah, I got that call and they said he was dead. Nah, I couldn't cry, but it hurt a nigga. Mostly because he was too young to find his purpose, nigga. This life is short, let's make it worth it, nigga. We all so far from perfect, nigga. The camera's rolling, no rehearsals, nigga. Blood scared, money never made a fucking purchase, nigga. Look at all this game in my verses, nigga. I swore that I would never have to work for niggas. I sacrificed like every nigga in my circle, nigga. Now world tours every summer like the circus, nigga. Barnum and Bailey, y'all clowns is crazy. These diamonds is flawless, that shit is fugazi. Just open your magazine, see my picture by Jay-Z. Brand new Mercedes, Los Angeles made. Pull up at the Shell, playing D'Angelo late. This industry racist, oh never mistake it. Can't say my name with niggas whose labels enslave them. You say my name with niggas like Malcolm and Jesus. Nah, count up that low, count up that low. Nah, black on black Benz, young niggas salute. Nah, go Cuban links, just rapping my roots. Nah, blood, sweat, and tears, just squeezing my fruits. Nah, count up that low, count up that low. Nah, black on black Benz, young niggas salute. Nah, go Cuban links, just rapping my roots. Nah, blood, sweat, and tears, just squeezing my fruits.
Preseason podcast of the year. Talked a little bit about the NFL divisional round. Thank you for listening to my ramblings and just my quick takes right after the Colts game ended. I mean, the Colts and Broncos just ended, just wrapped up, and we're talking a little football here. I'm going to conclude the podcast this time around. Just talking about the college football playoff because that's tomorrow night. If any of you guys have been following me, you know I'm an Ohio State fanatic. I'm born and raised in Ohio. I did not attend Ohio State University, but I did, or the Ohio State University, although I did apply, and I went to Bowling Green because Ohio State didn't give me enough money, so there you go. But Ohio State accepted me, I did apply, they accepted me, and I could have easily been a Buckeye had I chosen to, so I'm always considering myself a Buckeye at heart, especially growing up in Ohio. Everybody supports Ohio State there. The Scarlet and Gray is always number one, and they always put a better product on the field than the Bengals or the Browns, but they've made their way to the national championship game, and they're going to be taking on the Oregon Ducks, who are now the number one team in the country. My quick take on that game, I don't want to say quick take because that makes it sound hacky. My perspective. This is the HHSR perspective. I need to come up with a cool name for it, like the HHSR... No, not spin. That's not any good. I'll think of something. I'll come up with something clever, I promise. But here's what I'm thinking going into the game. First of all, the Oregon Ducks were last seen. They're still at large, as a matter of fact, the Oregon Ducks, because they beat the Seminoles senseless on New Year's Day. And they're still at large. They need to be locked up behind bars. They should be considered armed and dangerous because they punished Florida State at the Rose Bowl. But here's the funny thing about that game. And that's what we see on the surface. But when I step back and look at that game between Florida State and Oregon, which I got wrong, I had Florida State winning that game. Florida State was right there with Oregon in the first half. I mean, they were right there with Oregon in the first half. They were over their shoulder, like the little green dude on the Flintstones. He was like right there. Didn't he used to be over Flintstone's shoulder? I feel like he was. Am I dating myself? I'm not that old, y'all. I mean, I watched the Flintstones growing up, but I'm not like I'm 45 years old. I promise. But anyway, Florida State was neck and neck with Oregon in the first half, and in my opinion, Florida State actually should have had the lead at halftime, because if you recall, there was a couple plays in that first half. Florida State got right down to the 1 foot line, and Jameis scored a touchdown, but it was overruled by just a hair, because it was his knee hair was on touching the top of the blades of grass just before his ball the ball extended across the goal line, and it would have been a touchdown, but didn't happen. They overturned it. It was the right call, but I mean, it was by inches Florida State missed out on a touchdown. Then there was another series where Florida State had a touchdown. They had the receiver, I think it was O'Leary, the tight end, got yanked down in the end zone, and for reasons unbeknownst to the world, there was no penalty thrown on that play. And that would have given Florida State a fresh set of downs from the 1 yard line, but that didn't happen. I think they ended up kicking a field goal on that possession. And then there was another possession where Florida State ended up having to kick a field goal at the end of the half, and they ended up missing that field goal, but they were very close to getting it a little bit, getting it closer to making it a more makeable kick, and they just missed the kick by a little bit. But and I think it was maybe like a 4 or 5 point game at halftime, when it could have been a 1 or 2 point game at halftime, something like that. It was a close game. Jameis was moving the ball on them. Oregon had that one drive where they went like 90 yards, and they were pushing Florida State around running the ball, and it was impressive. I tweeted at the time, I'm like, Florida State is getting whipped right now by Oregon, the way Oregon was pushing them around, and they were seemingly, you know, metaphorically pushing that narrative of them being soft right out the box at the same time. But that was like the only real dominant drive we saw from Oregon in the first half to me, and I don't even know if that one resulted in a touchdown. I mean, Oregon put up some points, but it was nothing crazy, and that was a close game entering the third quarter. And then all hell broke loose. The wheels just came off, and Florida State couldn't hold on to the football. They had a freshman running back in there. He fumbled the ball twice. Not only was Oregon forcing these fumbles, but they recovered every single one of them. Like, how does that happen? And then Jameis has the one wacky play where he goes back to pass, and whoop, you know, the ball goes over his head, and then you got yakety sacks. You got that going in the background. You guys are running down the field for a touchdown, and it's a scoop and score, and all of a sudden the game gets blown wide open. Florida State's confidence is devastated. Then the defense quit. Now Oregon's moving the ball with ease up and down the field. And every time you look up, it's another touchdown. It's another touchdown. Scoreboard just lighting up like Vegas. You know what I'm saying? But when you fumble the ball like 4 times in a quarter, or however many times it was, 4 or 5. I think it was 4. You're not going to win a game. You're not going to win a game turning it over 4 times in a quarter. And they were all on fumbles. It was the most bizarre thing I'd ever seen. It was not something that could be easily replicated. When a guy fumbles the football, and this is just my opinion, but when a guy fumbles the football, to me, 9 times out of 10, it has more to do with that player not protecting the ball properly than it does the defender ripping it out. Now, you can take issue with that if you want to. That's just kind of how I view the game. I view it as, if a guy is carrying the rock the way he's supposed to, you ain't gonna get it out, no matter what you do. Unless you gouge his eyes or grab his groin or something, you're not getting that football. And we see it all the time. Every time a guy goes down at the end of a play, and you see, you know, when there's like 5 defenders around a guy, and the guy finally goes down, and you see that one defender rip his arm out like he's trying to start an old lawnmower, that thing, that's when the guy's trying to rip the ball out, but he can't because that ball carrier has secured it correctly. But usually, when you see fumbles, guys are running with the ball. They're holding a loaf of bread. They got the ball in, you know, the wrong hand. They didn't switch the ball to the correct hand when they hit the hole, kind of thing. And it gets punched out, but they didn't have it high and tight like Tiki Barber used to do or whatever. They're just not doing their job as a ball carrier more often than not. Do you think Oregon's going to force 5 fumbles against Ohio State? Because I don't. Or 4 fumbles, whatever it was. I don't see that happening. If that doesn't happen, maybe we have a different game. Maybe we have a different outcome. But when the game was when the game was still in question in the first half, we saw Florida State, who everybody hated, going toe-to-toe with Oregon. And so I wasn't as impressed as everybody else was by Oregon's victory. I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't dominant, but at the same time, you show me the next team that's going to fumble the ball 4 times in a quarter. Like, that just doesn't happen. That just does not happen. So keeping that in mind, I just think the first half was a far better representation of what the Oregon Ducks are going to look like on Monday night. And what I saw on Monday night was a very good team, but a team that could be scored on, a team that still could be pushed around. And now we have a situation where Oregon's going to be without their top corner who's injured. I think they lost a receiver the other day to a drug test situation. He was blowing trees before the national championship game, son. Come on, son. Word of Ed Lover. All that stuff, man. That stuff piles up. Now you got a relatively young and inexperienced head coach who's going to be forced to deal with these types of situations on the fly. And he's going to be going against Urban Meyer, who's been in, I think, now 3 national championship games. Urban Meyer, I believe, has lost 3 games since coming to Ohio State. He's already had a perfect season at Ohio State. He had a perfect season at Utah and a perfect season at Ohio State and didn't win a national championship either year. And then he has 2 national championships on top of that. So you can talk all you want about Nick Saban, but I'm here to tell you that Urban Meyer is as good, if not better, than anybody in the business, including Nick Saban. And he outcoached Nick Saban on New Year's Day in the Sugar Bowl. Ohio State battled back. They were down, I think, 21-6 in that game. They didn't quit. Cardale Jones, repping the 216, came through, and he was a force physically, just running down the field, rumbling down the field with his... He looked like Byron Leftwich. But when Byron Leftwich could still move a little bit, like, if, you know, he could always move just a little bit, barely. But that's what he looked like. He could move a little bit better than that, actually. But Cardale, man, 12-gauge. They call him 12-gauge for a reason, because he's got that cannon for a right arm. He's throwing it up top to Devin Smith. They're making plays. Michael Thomas, little Keyshawn Johnson's nephew, he's out here making plays, too. And the Buckeyes are just so well coached, and they've gotten so much better from the beginning of the season up till now. I think that Oregon has the ability to give the Buckeyes lots of problems running an up-tempo style that they run against everybody. And if they get Ohio State worn out, it's going to be a problem. They've never seen anything like Mariota. They've never seen a mobile quarterback like Mariota. So they're going to have to spy on him a lot, Ohio State is. And I'm going to need something from Joey Bosa, too, because Joey Bosa is one of the best defensive linemen in the country, and he was absent from the Sugar Bowl. But if Oregon is able to wear Ohio State down like they tend to wear down everybody, then, yeah, Oregon's going to have a great chance to win. But considering some of the turmoil that's surrounding this Oregon program off the field, considering what we know about Mark Helfrich as a coach and Urban Meyer as a coach, considering what we've seen from the Buckeyes on both sides of the ball, and specifically Ezekiel Elliott running the ball like he's the best running back in America. He's looking like he belongs on the short list. I'm not saying that he is, but he belongs on the short list the way he's looked the second half of the season. I gotta go with Ohio State, y'all. I gotta do it. Fire up the fight song. I gotta go with the Buckeyes because I just, I trust Urban Meyer. I trust history. One thing that you'll see about me in my picks most of the time is that I tend to fall back on history a lot. And I trust Urban Meyer. He's done it so many times before. He's done it as the underdog so many times before. Just like when he beat Ohio State in the national championship game while coaching Florida. Florida was a huge underdog. They went out and mopped the floor with the Buckeyes. They're an underdog again against Oregon. They're going up against the Heisman Trophy winner. And I just trust Urban Meyer, and I trust what the Buckeyes are able to do with their ground game. I think Ezekiel Elliott will have the capacity to control this game like he has against Wisconsin and against Alabama. And if he does it again, it's going to keep Oregon's high-flying offense off the field. It's going to keep the defense fresh. And that's just going to be what it is, man. I think, you know, just like we saw in the Sugar Bowl, third down obviously is going to be huge, but that kind of goes without saying. But without Darren Carrington, the Oregon's receiver who was ineligible, and just knowing what we know about both teams, I think Oregon is just very, very beatable. I do. And the Buckeyes are the hottest team in the country. They have the longest current winning streak in America. And I think that Ohio State is ready, man. I really believe that they are. Oregon could easily win. I'm not saying that Ohio State's going to win going away. I'm not saying Ohio State's going to blow Oregon out of the water. I'm not saying anything like that. But what I am saying is that I don't know if there's anything that Oregon can pull out that Urban Meyer hasn't seen before somewhere. And his team even had extra practice time. And I know some people are crying foul about that, but that's not Urban Meyer's fault. That's the way the schools are set up. You know, the Ohio State is on quarters, Oregon's on semesters. So that little practice rule thing, that's not cheating, y'all. That's not unfair. It just is what it is. And Oregon just has to deal with that. But the extra practice does favor the Buckeyes. And I think Ohio State wins the game. I think Ohio State brings the national championship back to the Big Ten for the first time since the 2002 season. And I think Urban Meyer wins another national championship, and he's closing in on Nick Saban. So we'll see if I'm right. I've been wrong before, but I think I know what I'm talking about a little bit. I don't know. We'll see. National championship game will be fun, y'all. And bravo to the playoff system and the committee for getting the playoffs right. They got the correct four teams in the playoff. And now we see the benefit of a playoff, because had it been just up to the polls themselves, we would have seen Florida State play Alabama for the national championship. And since we're playing it out on the field, we know that that's not what the championship is. And so I think we should be happy that we have a playoff system in place. I don't think we need an 8-team playoff. If we do expand the playoffs, I don't think it needs to go anywhere beyond 8 teams. I think that's the absolute maximum, is 8 teams. Absolute max. But I don't think we need to even do that. I like the 4-team system. Baylor and TCU kind of got hosed a little bit. Baylor ended up losing their bowl game. TCU dominated their bowl game. But I thought Ohio State had a better case over TCU, because TCU beat up on Iowa State. And, you know, you heard that whole spiel from me on the last podcast. So we'll see what happens tomorrow night, y'all. But thank you for listening tonight. About to cut out here on a HHSR preseason podcast of the year. About to go get me a steak dinner. You know what I'm saying? My wife is in the other room preparing me a steak, because I got it like that. So I'm over here podcasting, rapping with y'all. She in the kitchen cooking up a steak. It's going to be fly, and I'm hungry right now. So I'm hungry right now, y'all. So I'm about to get up out of here. Thanks for listening. Hit up the website, hiphopsportsreport.com. Tell me what you think. Am I wrong about whatever I've said this evening? Have I offended you in any way? Let me know. Holla at us. I'm a nice guy. I promise. You look at the comments on the webpage, on the website. I'm a nice dude. Just let me know what you think. You can disagree with me if you want. That's fine. We can banter back and forth. I'm always down for that. Same thing with on Twitter and on Facebook. So hit us up. Twitter and Facebook.com/HHS Report. HipHopSportsReport.com is the website. Jay Hicks signing off, y'all. Peace. Hating hoes ain't happy. And happy hoes ain't hating. Better check the situation. I can fix your situation. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Cut them bitches off when the ball drop. New year, new money, then the call drop. New year, new money, let them drugs drop. Cut them niggas off when the ball drop. Cause them real niggas ain't hate. And them hating niggas ain't real. And baby, I can help your situation. No time smoking medication. Yeah. This the new year resolution. We gotta be the winners cause the rest is losing. I told him get money, that's the best solution. When you do, wear your rocket like you rest in Houston. When niggas stole my style, I ain't stressed to boosting. It's time to make more money, less excuses. My old bitch on death row, it's time for execution. My new bitch is badass, she the best since Boosie. Like whoa, whoa, whoa. Drop.
check the situation. I can fix your situation. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I cut them bitches off when the ball drop. New year, new money, then the call drop.
New year, new money, let them drugs drop. Cut them niggas off when the ball drop. Cause them real niggas ain't hate. And them hating niggas ain't real. And baby, I can help your situation. No time smoking medication.
Cutting off hoes when the ball drop. Ride with my woes till the casket drop. Quiet for you suckers, hear pin drop. I buy this motherfucker like the price drop. Shorty back it up, let the ass drop. Mommy killing them, tat a teardrop. Bitch, I'm on fire, need to stop drop. Nigga, this the flow that got your artist drop. Heard he was a rat, heard he dime drop. Hit him in the head, watch the body drop.